Welcome to Hot Off the Press, a podcast that provides knowledge and emotional support for new and aspiring printers. I'm Jillian of Studio Soprano.
And I'm Mariah of Mariah Creates, and we are two letterpress printers who believe in sharing our knowledge and learning together.
We're here to help bridge the gap between antique printing methods and modern design.
So hang up your apron,
put down those palette knives,
and let's get into what's hot off the press. Hello, friends, and a big welcome back to Hot Off the Press. I'm your host, Mariah of Mariah Creates, and I'm here with my biz bestie and fellow print aficionado, Jillian of Studio Soprano. We have talked a lot about platen presses throughout various episodes, but we thought it would be really fun to dive a little deeper into some of the history of Chandler and Price in particular. If you don't already know, this is the type of press that I mainly operate on, and it was also one of the larger producers of printing equipment in the U.S. So if you're into letterpress, whether you're a printer or you're just really interested in it, you've probably seen one of these, or maybe you even have one.
I'm really excited for this because even when I first started shopping for a letterpress, like I heard CNP, like that's what you would look for, a CNP. So to like get the history of that company, I think is going to be really fun and exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, I actually found some really cool documents and sources on the internet that I think will be really fun to share with everyone too. So you'll have a visual and you can look through these too. But I actually had a lot of fun researching this, not only because my press and my paper cutter are this make, but just because it was one of the largest producers in the United States. And because, you know, it's something that like is actually relative to a lot of other presses. And, you know, your press is a Challenge Gordon, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So although your press is a different make, it's actually a very similar style because the Challenge was the producer, but the style was the Gordon style of press. And so I learned a little bit about all that as well. So yeah, let's get into it.
Yay!
Let's start with a little history of Chandler and Price to get started. So Chandler and Price was founded by Harrison Chandler and William Price in 1881 in Cleveland, Ohio. Harrison was an investor, so he brought kind of the funds, and then William was a mechanic, so he kind of covered that end of the business. And they really started this company because of a guy named George Gordon. So we're kind of looping back to your Challenge Gordon press. George Gordon had created a type of press that was basically a spinoff of the alligator style clamshell presses where they slam shut. And we did an episode where we talked about these, but which, you know, you can go listen to. But basically presses at, you know, early stages had been these platen presses just kind of snapped shut and were really dangerous and a lot of fingers were probably lost. So George Gordon kind of took this style of press and adapted it. He added cambers so that the platen actually opened up and became more level for the person who was feeding in or pulling out the sheets of paper. So it gave them a little more hang time to swap out that sheet of paper, but then it brought the platen back level to meet the form for a nice even impression. So George Gordon was kind of known for that particular style of press. And then he had patents on that. He sold a lot of his presses throughout his lifetime. And when he passed away in the late 1870s, he was a millionaire from the sales of his presses. But there was some discrepancy with his will and his estate when he passed away. Eventually, his press, his company was restructured and called Gordon Press Works. And then that was actually sold by his trustees to Chandler and Price of Cleveland. So in the 1880s. And they continued manufacturing the Gordon style press as well as Chandler and Price presses through the late 1800s and early 1900s. So not only did they manufacture their own presses, and then they created automatic feeder for those, paper cutters, proof presses, book presses, and so much more. The factory that they had covered about 4 acres of floor space, and it was the largest in the world at the time for producing jobbing presses and paper cutters, etc. In the first year of operation, they made about 300 presses. And overall, it's estimated that they made about 100,000 presses over the 80 years of production. So obviously, some of those are still in use today. Who knows how many? I know that there are some, you know, records of serial numbers and things, but I don't think that there's any kind of record of how many of those are still in existence, but definitely still out there. And when you're looking for letterpresses, definitely one of the ones you're more likely to see, at least in North America.
Yeah, and especially at an affordable price, too. I think, like, the rarity of certain presses is what makes them very expensive, but you know, luckily a lot of people hung on to their CMPs. So they're...
Yeah. And there's all kinds of, you know, different types of Chandler and Price products have been donated to museums, like proof presses and platen presses and things like that, and colleges as well. So some of them are being, you know, actually conserved, not just put into use still. So I think that's kind of cool to see as well.
I will say, like, this kind of research makes me kind of proud of, like, the American industrial history. Because sometimes when I think of, like, really innovative mass manufacturing, I don't think us. Like, other than the car, yeah. I don't think us. Like, Germany is a country that makes, like, gosh, almost every kind of machining equipment possible. And so to think that we had, like, the largest printing press manufacturer
in the world.
Kind of, it's kind of impressive considering what a young country we are.
For sure. I mean, you think about 1884, our country was only like a little over 100 years old, and they were already, you know, one of the largest manufacturing of printing presses and production in the world, you know, which is, it's kind of cool to think about, because obviously there's a little bit of history with, you know, the American Revolution and Benjamin Franklin and printing, but it's just really cool to think that, you know, we really just, we're all about full sending it here in the US. Also, I don't know if you know this, but Klug or Kluge, I don't know how you say it. I feel like everyone says it differently, but let's call it Klug. What do you
I'll
say?
I'll go with Klug. Yeah.
Okay.
I like Klug.
So,
I'm always Klug. About a silent letter in a name.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you realize, but Klug was actually founded in St. Paul, Minnesota.
I did not realize that at all.
Yeah. And they're still in operation, and they are in Wisconsin. So they're still in the same area. So Klug and Chandler Price, I mean, between the two, that's like a huge chunk of printing press equipment for the last, you know, for the 1900s, essentially. So, kind of wild. So let's talk about Chandler Price again. So what made their presses really popular was their, I think this is actually really funny and we'll have a good conversation, I think, but their relative ease of use and their superior print quality. So we're talking about, you know, ease of use based on other presses in production in this time, right? So when you and I like go set up a Vandercook for a print job, we're like, wow, this is so easy. But the Chandler and Prices, you know, they're talking about make ready, right? Like being able to just lift up the little clamps and add packing or remove packing, you know, being able to adjust all of that and everything, I think is what they're kind of referring to here. And cleanup, which I actually will say that I think cleaning up like Chandler and Price platen press versus something like a Vandercook is so much easier. It's just because there's so much less, you know, nooks and crannies and things to get into, like, and everything is right there in front of you. So your three rollers and your ink disc are just right there. You literally just wipe them off and you're done for the most part. So
I agree. And then if you think about, obviously, we're in the future looking back, but if you look at some of the presses that were being used, you know, pre-Gordon press era, they would take multiple people to operate.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you would have this machine where you really one person can set it up and run it and do everything, that is peak efficiency at that time.
Yeah, for sure. And like you think about like the big book presses where you had to individually ink every time you printed, you know, like even just the clamshell presses evolving from that type of press is pretty impressive. So
So
Chandler and Price was still, you know, one of the largest manufacturers of this era, and they were still dominating the industry until about the 1950s. And then, you know, the offset printing industry began to take over, and Chandler and Price continued to produce presses until 1964, and the company did close its doors. So yeah, I think, you know, it's only like 80 something years of time, which it sounds like nothing when you're looking back at history, but like if my company is still around in 80 years, that's going to be wild, right? Like, so I mean, 80 years sounds like nothing when we're looking back, I suppose, but yeah, I think it's pretty cool. And 100,000, you know, presses out there in the country or the world, I guess. Yeah. So they really made kind of three different generations of presses. And I'll talk just briefly about some of the other things they made, but we're going to mostly focus on the printing presses, obviously. They did make proof presses, but we're talking platen presses because that's kind of their bread and butter for now. There were three generations of them, And if you're someone who is looking to purchase a press and you're kind of looking at what's on the market, some of this will actually be probably helpful. But otherwise, it's just kind of interesting how they kind of evolved and the different styles that they made. So the three generations, starting in 1884 up until 1910, was, which is what I have, a old style. And it had wavy spokes. So you can kind of identify each of the different types by the flywheel. They have three distinct, very different styles for each, or one style for each generation that's very distinctly different than the others. So the first one, the old style, has the wavy spokes. It's really cute. It looks like very aesthetically pleasing, and it looks very like classic. And then after 1920, they started to produce what's called the new style, which has straight plain spokes on the flywheel. And then after 1921, they made the Craftsman line, which has a solid flywheel. So it's actually just like one sheet of metal and no spokes. So when you see them in the real world, they're very easily identifiable by those three things. You know immediately kind of what you're looking at and what era they're going to be made in. The old style was the first rendition, and it was very true to the Gordon style platen press. And we talked a little about kind of how Gordon is known for that. He took the snapping alligator style of clamshell. He added camber so it leveled and opened up a little bit more for the operator to make it easier to swap out sheets of paper, but still met the form at a parallel for good print quality. So kind of meeting that like balance point of quality and ease of use, right? Yep. And then they upgraded their press with the new style in the 1920s. And they basically just took out any unnecessary parts. They started using like machined feet, things like that, just creating like using more modern technology, which I'm sure in those couple of decades, you know, technology really expanded a lot and gave them some new options. But their sales brochure calls it more advanced and modern lines of construction. So they're just basically considering it more like simple construction and sturdier. And the idea being that this allows it to last longer, right? And any parts are absolutely necessary. So if something breaks, you just replace it. Like there's no like, oh, like it's very, I think, cut and dry, kind of black and white. It's kind of what they were going for. It was also more compact. So it's lower to the ground and it brings the platen in the bed closer to the floor, making it easier for a person to stand and feed the press and also change the form, make ready, wash up, all of that. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to think how they, I actually had a conversation, I think, with Chloe of Barrio Press. She and I were talking, like, she and I are both around the same height. Like, we're like 5'7", 5'8". Mm-hmm. And when you stand next to your press, and ours are on pallets, so they're a little bit off the ground, but, like, it's kind of tall. Like, you're really standing at, like, your arms are kind of extended straight in front of you. It's very, like, shoulder height. And mm-hmm. we're like, dude, how did, like, we're not, like, short people. Like, how did regular, like, men press, like, print on these all day, every day? Like, it's kind of crazy. And it kind of makes sense to me that like the new style would be a little bit lower to the ground, because we've literally had that conversation where we're like, damn, this could be a few inches lower and be way more comfortable. But yeah,
it's so, so funny because mine is so much lower than yours.
Yours is like, from a photo, you kind of think, oh, like they look very similar. But in real life, Jillian's press is way more compact. It's a little bit lower to the ground. I don't know if that's necessarily because it is strictly a foot treadle operation for yours, or if it has more to do with the make and model, but it's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And mine's not totally sitting on the floor. It's probably because yours is on a pallet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mine's
like 4 or 5 inches off the ground.
Yeah. Mine's on 2x4s. So it's about like one and a little, some change yeah. off the ground. But it comes under my feed tray, comes under my belly button.
Yeah. Mine's like
that's how low it is.
Yeah, mine's like a good 6 inches probably higher, I would say, than yours, as far as like the feed tray where it hits you. Yeah. It's yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so the new style was definitely like the bread and butter. It's the one that you're going to see the most often, and it's the one they made the most of. And it was available in 4 sizes. So it started out, the smaller one was the 8x12, and that's referring to the chase size of the press. So when we refer to the sizes, that's the actual chase. And the 8x12 weighed about 1,050 pounds, and it has a maximum of 2,600 impressions per hour for speed. That was the recommended maximum speed for these presses. So obviously that's a huge amount of production. This press was meant for smaller forms, but it was also called the most productive because it was intended to run at those higher speeds, whereas as they get bigger, they get slower. It's all relative, of course. It still sounds really fast when you get to these larger sizes, but just kind of the like selling point of this press was that it's going to be, you know, you can print a lot more at a higher speed.
Yeah.
The next size up is a 10 by 15. That one weighs about 1,500 pounds. So it's about 450 pounds heavier, sorry. And they recommended a maximum speed of 2,300 impressions per hour. And this was considered the most useful size of Gordon Press, and it would be practical for any print shop, right? So this is kind of like the coverall, like anyone could make use of this press. It would do kind of like the majority of jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we move up to the 12 by 18, and this one weighs a good 2,100 pounds. And these are, by the way, unboxed. So this is like just the press. They have a, you know, they have a boxed weight. So when it's boxed up to ship versus just the press weight. So this is just the press itself, 2,100 pounds. And this one is recommended to run at no more than 1,800 impressions per hour. So when you're going from 2,600 to 1,800, that is a noticeable difference in speed. So it's meant to handle printing like two or three up of a smaller size form or larger full size type forms. And this was the press they called always busy in the shop. Like no matter what you're printing, like this press is always going to be in use. When you're getting ready to set up a job, like this press was probably already occupied, that kind of thing. And then the big boy. So I didn't even know these existed until a few months ago, but they made a 14.5 by 22 of new style. Yeah. So massive.
I can't even imagine standing next to that. Like that would have to be a pretty large.
Oh yeah. Let me get you the dimensions because I actually found this somewhere. So the 8 by 12 dimensions, when boxed. So this is in like a big box to ship, right? So it's 35 inches by 40 inches.
Oh.
So it's like 3 by 4, right? 35 by 40.
That's not that big.
So the 14 by 22.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was the 14 by 22. No. I was like, wait.
That's... So the 8 by 12 is 35 by 40.
Okay.
The new series 14.5 by 22 is 46 by 56.
Okay. Yeah.
So it says floor space, 62.5 inches by 67 inches, which is kind of fun. So the 8 by 12 floor space is recommended to be 40.5 by 48.
Yeah.
So basically 3.5 by 4 feet versus what is that?
6 by 6 almost.
Yeah. 6 by 6. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty big. So kind of cool. I didn't even know that existed. I would like one. Thank you very much. But apparently you could also special order this press so that the feeding capacity to take larger sheets could be up to 35 inches. So This, I think, was their answer to flatbed cylinder presses. This was their way of like getting into that larger market because they recommended you could print like folding boxes and large like poster sheets. And this one weighs a whopping 2,700 pounds. Holy crap. And it's recommended to run at a maximum of 1,500 impressions.
Can you imagine moving that?
Well, what's crazy is like, I think the Heidelbergs are like 2,400 pounds, if I remember correctly or have been quoted correctly. So like, it just seems like
true.
Yeah, it seems like so much weight. But anyway, I will share a link for this article or the sales brochure because I think it's really cool. Like, it feels really fun to actually see this. I mean, I don't know who uploaded this, but bless you because it's really awesome. It's like time traveling, you know, like in the 1920s, you're looking to buy a press. This is the sales brochure that would absolutely sell you. I do wish it had pricing because I think that would be really fun to see. But anyway, and there was one thing kind of mentioned in it that I thought was really interesting and relevant to a lot of conversations that Julian and I have. We both have an 8x12 press, and we tend to print things that are maybe a little out of what's recommended by the general population. I'm trying to put this very nicely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those are large print areas. So, you know, we're trying to maximize how much we're printing of our chase size. And of an 8x12 chase size, I mean, we've both heard what, like a third or of your chase size is what your printable area should be.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sales brochure that was printed by Chandler and Price, it was designed by another company, but printed by Chandler and Price, they said, and I quote, "Each press is designed to carry a full form of type matter. Its capacity is limited only by the size of the chase."
Ha!
Ha ha! Yeah. So I think that's really interesting. Like, I do, obviously there's a big difference between a full form of like 8-point font but then, you know, a large pattern that we're trying to print. But like, is there a difference?
Yeah, I don't know. But if there's one thing that companies have always been known for, especially back in the day, it's sleazy marketing.
That's true. Like, absolutely valid.
How many things were like cocaine was sold as like a medicine? You know what I mean? That's, like,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong in any way. Yeah.
But I feel like that was probably what the company strove for. That makes sense to me. Why bother manufacturing something that is so large that is only going to print like this tiny little area? Like, I look at my press and I'm like, you are such a huge machine for a 6x9 area.
Yeah.
And then to think that if I got the even larger model, that I would only have a printable area that's the size of my current chase is also mind-blowing to me.
I do too. And I mean, I think we both have pushed the limits of our presses many times that we know that, you know, that 1/3 rule is definitely a flexible number.
Yeah. Also think it really depends on how well maintained your press is. These presses straight off the line, probably you could fill the whole chase, but not a lot of jobs require that. And, you know, things compress over time, and they're like 100%. There's nothing flat on my press. Like, there is no perfectly flat surface on my press.
True. And also when we're thinking about print quality, like, we're smashing 220-pound cotton paper with polymer plates, and we are looking for that perfect ink coverage and an even impression across the whole piece. Whereas when they were printing newspapers with a kiss impression, you know, on text weight paper, that's a whole different concept. So anyway, I think it's really interesting to think about, and, you know, for them to recommend that, you know, a capacity is only limited by the size of its chase, I think that's a fun way to look at this as a new challenge, you know, and rethink about how we do things, I think, a little bit. But
I have recently tried to push the bounds of my press, and I don't know, man. I don't know if I could go much larger. I will say this. I am very tempted to have a custom boxcar base made, size-wise, not height-wise, although that'd probably be a good idea too. But something that would be larger, because I am curious to see, like, the past 3 jobs I've printed, I've had to put the plate onto my boxcar base in such a specific way because the artwork was just kind of bleeding off the base.
Yeah.
And the print quality was pretty good. I mean, it definitely took a rhythm of skip feeds to get it to look even. But, you know, and then of course a nightmare of a time just dicking around with the rollers and the rails. But
yeah,
other than that, like, I think I could have printed it the way I wanted if I had a larger base.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. I've had the same kind of thought before because, like, the way we set up our presses using, like, we don't put the form in and then register the piece of paper to the form. We do it the other way around. We register the form to the piece of paper, which may or may not make sense to those listening. But if you get it, you get it. I think the way we set up our presses, having a larger base would not do us any harm.
Right.
The size that we have, the 6x9 and our 8x12 chase, is recommended because you need room for furniture and keys. But I have furniture on all 4 sides of my base. I really feel like I could probably reduce the size of furniture and the space needed for furniture pretty greatly. I think I could probably get away with like a 7x10 at least in my press. Obviously, the boxcar bases are expensive, so I'm probably not likely to buy one for that exact purpose. But I do think that if I were doing it all over again with what I know now, I'd probably go for like a custom size that's like 7x10.
I agree. I'm really debating on it just because I have found like a sweet spot on my platen. I really think it is. And, you know, we've talked about it endlessly about leveling your platen.
Back and forth.
But I do think that there is some configuration between the inconsistency of the rails and whatever, something on the platen, where there is this one really sweet spot And I would love to be able to maximize that. But the problem is I can't turn my base 90 degrees because 9 inches is too high, obviously. Yeah. So it would just be really nice to be able to run like a 5x7 vertically on the left-hand side of my press instead of running it in the center, where I truthfully believe that there's just a very minimal indentation in the platen from projects being run on the center of the press for 100 years.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And, you know, like, it's hard to know when they were brand new what that all would have printed like. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, I would give anything to like
have a brand new out of the box press. Can you imagine? I would pay millions.
I know this is the Chandler and Price episode, but you know, I would give anything to have a new Gordon, a Challenge Gordon side by side, so I could see whether I am just a complete freaking idiot or if it's just the wear and tear on this machine that I am fighting. It's been an uphill battle. And if you're a close friend, you know I'm gravely considering swapping Gordy out for a larger CMP, which will break my heart the day that it happens. But man, I am really fighting an uphill battle with this press.
I truly believe you'll get over it in about no time, about the first print job. I will say, like, if Outlander happened and I touched some rocks and I fell through time to the 1700s, the first thing I'd be doing is walking straight to a print shop. I'd be like,
"Hell yes.
Hi, excuse me, person. Could I borrow your horse? I need to go find a print shop. I need to answer all of these questions. I need to know." That would be my mission. I would absolutely, I would literally
slam the doors open and then just take the biggest inhale.
Yeah.
Sniff all the beautiful toxins of a print shop.
I'd be like, "Excuse me, Jamie Fraser. I have printing to do. I'll be back." Literally. Yeah.
I like this.
One last thing I want to say about the new style presses, and then we'll move on to a few other things that they made. But the new style press was, we already mentioned, one of the most widely produced and popular presses of the time. But it was so widely produced and so popular, perhaps also very well marketed, that the standard textbook for teaching printing, which is called The Practice of Printing, Letterpress and Offset by Ralph Polk, used the press as its example. And the press was intended to be like the peak of efficiency and dependability. So, you know, this was like kind of their angle, right? And this book has been kind of the standard for teaching in like high school print classes and print shops for most of the 1900s. So yeah, I think that's pretty cool to note that like this was literally the press people learned on. It was meant to be easy to use, efficient, and reliable. So yeah, so there you go. So if you're looking to buy a press, that's our one sales pitch to you. And then, so yeah, they made a few other things. And I think that some of these are actually really interesting. So I didn't realize, I guess I knew of this, but I wasn't aware of like what it looked like or that it was specifically made by Chandler and Price, but they made a little like automatic feeder for the Chandler and Price platen presses. And they called it the Rice feeder, which first of all, I think is hilarious. Like I understand that it's someone's name, but to call a paper feeder a rice feeder just sounds like a farm equipment. Like, you know what I mean? I'll include a link in the show notes to a YouTube video so you can see what this looks like. But basically, it's like two little arms. It kind of looks like a little like person. It literally looks like it's replicating a person's actions. Like when you're printing, like one arm kind of reaches in to grab the old sheet, the printed sheet, and one arm reaches in with a new sheet. It literally looks like two little arms just reaching in and out. It's really funny. It definitely is not as efficient and beautiful as a Heidelberg, but it's very cool. And, you know, it's a nice option, I think, for people to have. And they also made paper cutters. I happen to have one from 1920, which is kind of fun.
I love it.
Yeah, my paper cutter is pretty big. It does weigh, I think, about the same as my press. It's in that like 1200 pound mark, I think. But what's kind of cool about Chandler and Price paper cutters is that they had a patented like knife stop, which was meant to kind of keep the knife sharp for longer and meant to cut really accurately without creasing the paper, aka ruining, you know, your sheets. And it has a really wide arm that you use like a lever. It's pretty heavy and pretty big, but it was meant to be really accurate. So that's kind of nice to note. I don't know what years they made them in. I think there was like 20 years that they made them. I don't know what those 20 years were, but I know that the one I have has a mark or has a plaque from 1920. So in the 20s and 30s, let's say, probably. And then, you know, they, of course, manufactured machine parts for all of their things. So, you know, you could buy and replace parts as needed when they were in existence. So yeah, the paper cutters, and then they also made a proofing press, which is kind of cool. So if you're familiar with Vandercook's, you know, those are obviously the same, the galley style proof press. The Chandler and Price ones were meant to, like, you basically, you would set up your form, you would add some ink to it by hand with a brayer or ink thingy, and then you would run just a copy to make sure that you could look at for any spelling or grammatical issues and fix them before they go on to the press. And so they made two different sizes of these. They were like 10 by 30 and 16 by 31 or something like that. And those little babies weighed about 300 pounds. So, you know, just little guys. And then they also made the Chandler and Price Pilot Press. So we've talked about the floor models and the paper cutters and the other things, but the pilot press, I think, is still something that you see. I think it's really funny when you're looking to buy a press that the pilot press, which is a tabletop press, and usually I think the Chase is 6.5 by 10 or something like that. Those tabletop presses tend to be some of the most expensive ones out there. And they're usually more expensive than the floor model 8 by 12 like I have. And those were meant for like small runs of cards or tickets, little menus, things like that. It was meant to be just really simple. So you didn't need any experience to operate it because it's pulled by hand. So, you know, there's no machine or foot treadle to worry about. So it's really safe. And yeah, meant to be just like really quick and easy to set up and easy to use. And, you know, meant to be used in like a setting where it's not a full print shop, for example. So yeah, so the Chandler and Price Pilot Press is definitely something that you'll see out there in the market. And I think they tend to run like, I don't know, like $1,500 or more from what I've seen. And yeah, I mean, they made a lot of other things. They made like little, you know, lead rulers for setting type, and they made tabletop paper cutters as well, which were smaller. Some of the little accessories they make that I think were really interesting, they made little ink fountains. So they made like a small one, which was less expensive and easier to clean, right? That's the advertisement than like a full size ink fountain. So basically it just adds ink as you're printing. So that if you're doing longer runs of stuff, you don't have to stop and ink up again and that kind of thing. And then they also made what they called the vibrating roller. And it was a device for getting better ink distribution. And I think I haven't seen a video of one of these in action, so if anyone is familiar, they can absolutely correct me. But basically, I think on a like a bigger form, when you would double ink, it's meant to like add an extra layer of ink. So it, I don't know exactly how it works, but I would be interested to find out more. So that'll be episode part two.
I'm interested in anything that
saves us.
Could possibly provide better ink coverage.
Yeah. And then the craziest thing that I saw that they make, and I think you're going to laugh when you hear this, they made a duplex disc that prints two different colors at one time.
Oh.
So picture your round.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Have you seen this? Okay.
No, but has, like, my brain's already going.
So it has two colors on either side. So like left is one color, right is another color. And in, so your round ink disc basically just cut in half down the middle, right? But on either side, it has a little rotating mini disc in the center of it.
Uh-huh.
I just cannot wrap my brain around how this actually works, but how cool is that? I want to see one of these.
Yeah.
If anyone has one, please send us a video because I'm very curious.
I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the full lineup of what they made. And again, I'll share some resources so you can see some of the documents and photos and videos and things of what we're talking about here. But I just think it's really cool to think about some of these really individualized and unique tools, and they, yeah, it's just a really great piece of American printing history. And
yeah.
One of the things I read, I think on the APA's website, was that George Gordon, like, he passed away, all of his like estate and company went into like, you know, what do they call it? Litigacy? Is that a word?
Liquidation?
Went into like yeah, I think litigation is a word, but is litigacy a word? Anyway.
Litigation is like when there's like
there were lawyers involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it went into whatever. He passed away. His company was up in the air. We have no idea what's going to happen to it. His family is like contesting this will that his lawyer like found a year later and happened to be the beneficiary of. And then they contested the will and all kinds of things happened. So I think that there was a little bit of debate. And then eventually I think they were successful in contesting that will and were able to like sell the company then to Chandler and Price. So I think there was a little bit of a gap in time for, because he passed in like the late 1870s.
Yeah, 1878. At 67. Yeah. Go him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does say he left no will and his relatives went into litigation, which makes sense. Like his assets didn't go into litigation, but his relatives did.
Yeah.
Love it when people just like work their whole lives to like have something and then just leave it to fucking nobody. I love that.
I know.
that to me says there was some toxicity in and around his close personal relationships.
Well, I mean, no offense to George Gordon, but like age 67 in 1878, I mean, dude, you had to imagine that it was getting near, right? Like,
I feel like when you were 20, you should be writing wills back in 1878.
Yeah,
like,
and just, if he was a millionaire in the 1870s, I mean, can you imagine what that would be today? I don't know, but anyway.
No, but so, I love doing that kind of math. Let's see.
Yeah, so the corporate title of the firm was changed to Gordon Pressman. This is from the APA's website. We'll link the article in the show notes. But the corporate title of the firm after George Gordon passed was changed to Gordon Pressworks and placed in the hands of a receiver. A lawyer later came forward and announced that he had located the mysterious will and he had been named executor and a chief beneficiary. The relatives united and challenged the validity of this will. Eventually, the will was proved to be a forgery and the lawyer was imprisoned. Yay,
yeah,
justice.
I was just
going to
say that. Like, that reeks of forgery.
Satisfactory. I do appreciate the justice. The relatives then consented to an amicable division of what remained of the estate. Eventually, the Gordon Pressworks was sold to Chandler and Price of Cleveland. Chandler and Price continued to build their jobber as well as those of the Gordon Company until 1909, which was the old series, as we know. Nice. And then they moved into the new series after that. So
nice.
Very fun.
FYI, $1 million in the year 1800 would be worth $24.1 million today.
Damn.
So
that's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's wild.
Well, that was really interesting. Thank you so much. I loved learning all of that history.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go to my shop and give my press and my paper cutter a big hug and a little oil and some grease. And yeah, but really cool. I think, you know, this is definitely when we're looking. I mean, I'm always looking on Craigslist and eBay and stuff just to see what's out there. But these are definitely the types of presses you're going to see the most of. If I were going out to buy a press today, I would probably be looking for like a new style Chandler and Price, just because I do think that the new style has a little bit more punch. Yeah. So I think that, you know, this is a solid press, obviously a great manufacturer and a super solid press even today. So definitely something to consider if you're looking to buy a press. And as far as price point goes, you know, we've seen them anywhere from free, please come get it, to, you know, a couple $1,000s. So definitely at a lower price point than some of the presses we'll talk about in other episodes, like the Vandercooks, which are definitely some of the higher end price points. So as far as size and bang for your buck, it's definitely one of the best options out there. So cool. Hope you all enjoyed learning about Chandler and Price and enjoy some of the articles and things that we'll link, because there's a lot of really cool documentation out there. And if you have any information or would like to argue with us about any of these things that we mentioned, please feel free. You can send us an email at hello@hotoffthepresspodcast.com or send us a message on Instagram, which is definitely an easier way to get a hold of us. And we are at hotoffthepresspod on Instagram. And send us a photo of your Chandler and Price if you have one. We'd love to hear its story if you've got an information to share.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.